Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Oh, Viva El Fulham, is there a greater sound? No, it's a very quick question, it's a very quick answer. This is the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Fulhamish podcast, the Fulhamish team. What a strong squad they have, and the depth continues. Tonight, I'm joined by Don Betts, Guy Barlow and Joe Sampson. There is so much to get through because Fulham, one win in five now, losing at home to Hull on the weekend. Was this their worst performance of the season so far? We're going to be doing a review of that game. Free word reviews are coming up. I'm very much looking to see what you had to say. You're a big part of this show, and you're a bigger part because we're going to be doing listener questions and getting through as much of them as we possibly can. And delighted to say we'll be doing a Birmingham City opposition view. Dele Adebola will be joining us for that one, giving us his take on the game on the weekend. But it was that poor performance, and Dom mentioned it, didn't he, as a big thing on this show. He said that Fulham, they're having the possession, but take out that Millwall game, take out a couple of other games, they're not scoring goals. They're having 75%. They can't, just they're not creating, and when they do, they're not taking those chances. How big a problem is that, and how big a problem is it at the back? Because it was Hull free on the weekend. There's only one place to start. I think, Dom, it is the free word reviews. Let's kick them off, my friend.
We'll start off on Twitter, as always. We got some good content. We had Richard Solbamba, one of our favourite listeners, with Best We Forget. Obviously, there was a minute silence again for, obviously, Lest We Forget, Remembrance Sunday being this Sunday, last home game before it. Sam Witcher with Mauled at Home with the famous Hull
had to
City,
be.
Mauled by the Tigers. Neil, or we won it one time on Twitter with Happy Halloween.
Oh, good.
Instagram will go to George Rosser, another favourite listener of ours, Hellish, Hullish, Fulhamish. Jay Paris, 1111, Don't Blame Parker, and Ted Hill Official with Brianless and Brainless.
Oh, Happy Halloween. What, two words, three words, Guy?
Two,
yeah. It's not. Doesn't count, does it?
No,
we're not having it, are we, Guy?
There is a lot of replies which aren't three words. I was like, literally.
How hard is three word? It's my favourite bit of the show. We can't. It's not working, Guy. Do you have a three word review of your own?
Well, no. I just want to say you're far too upbeat for the start of the show. That's what
Sorry,
I'm saying,
Guy.
Mate.
Can I?
We lost 3-0 at home to Hull.
Right. All right. I'm gonna. Second chances,
yeah,
available.
Please.
You know
is
what
that
it
your
is?
Free review? Second chance is available.
Yeah, second chance is available. It's because I get to see you, Guy. I only spend 1 hour in a week in your company. Sometimes not even I don't get to see you because the squad depth is so strong. I'm excited to do this show. But yeah, let's really kick it off. It was Hull on the weekend. It was 3-0. Really disappointing. Worst performance of the season, Guy. Please tell me all about it.
Well, I think we obviously got off to a bad start with Brian going off. And that seemed just to throw us, didn't it?
I said this last week. I've been saying this for ages. Yeah. We don't have cover for it.
Yeah.
And
Dom, you're too upbeat. Too much energy. It was 3-0 on the weekend.
But also, I don't think Maxine Martial had as bad of a game as everyone is saying he did.
No, neither do I. And he certainly grew into it. And, I mean, I think he was fouled for their first goal as well. And I think Betts should have saved it. So, you know, it was just a terrible start. Brian going off and then that was like literally a minute and a half in. And I think their first goal was in the 9th minute. But bear in mind, Brian going off had been like 4 minutes, him going down. There was a whole like mess of like Betts kept kicking it out to make a sub when the sub wasn't ready.
Like, why was you doing that?
I don't know, mate. It's just what I felt like doing. I mean, I thought I might speed up some time.
So even then, you could just tell it was like just disjointed rubbish. I mean, I do think in the first half, we played a lot better than we did in the second half. And Micho had a header from a corner right on the stroke of half-time, free header, which you should have buried. And our only shot on target in the whole game, I think you should have buried as well. And obviously, if he puts one of those away, it's a different game going into half-time. But in the second half, they just caught us on the counter twice. as they were always going to do, because we were creating absolutely nothing. Fullbacks offering absolutely nothing going forwards. And Mawson and Ream just toothless in their possession, like not playing the right passes out from the back. And we just ended up tactically, nonsensically at the end with just, you know, about 5 million attackers on again. Just, oh, we're losing. Let's chuck an attacker on. Like, it, and
it's what I've been doing with Football Manager ever since the beta came out last week.
Well, like, no one knew what their actual job was when they came in. Like, tactically, what they were supposed to be doing, who they were supposed to be marking, when we were defending, and we got caught in the break twice. I mean, it was just a horrible game.
It was a horrible game. Dom, is it fair to say that this was Fulham's worst performance of the season so far?
You can look at the opening day and look at our defeat to Barnsley, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think the worrying sign is that we haven't come back from a goal down yet. Every time we've conceded, we have gone on to lose the game. And that's a severe problem. I think there's a question in our listener questions section later on asking, what do we need to change when Parker sort of comes in and goes 1-0 down? Because, again, every time we concede first, we don't end up getting a result in the game. And that is a problem you need to look at. Is it a Parker's tactical issue? Is it the way he's setting up the team? Are we not set up to go a goal down? Are we only set up to hopefully squeeze the opposition and get a goal? I mean, if you look in the first half, we have three crosses into the box, right, that go into a great position, but there's no one on the end of it. And we've got what arguably the best striker in the league, arguably the best player in the league, in Alexander Mitrovic, and there's no one there. So for me, I think the tactics you've got to be questioning, because every time we go down one goal, we don't seem to know what to do whatsoever.
Well, Tony Knockers was brought on. Fulham were dominating the possession, Dom. But you mentioned it, and I remember it weeks ago, and we have to go back to it. You said, yeah, well, we'll take out that Fulham game. We're not scoring the goals. Well, they're not scoring the goals, but how big a concern is this? Why aren't they scoring the goals when they are dominating the possession?
Yeah, as you said, look, if you minus the Millwall, you minus the Reading game, we probably average no more than 2 goals a game. Maybe 1.8, 1.9 maybe.
XG, mate. XG.
Yeah.
Love a bit of XG.
Second in XG in the league still.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Brentford are probably
top. But would they be after those two games?
Mate. But it, as if I know that. Come on.
Yeah, George Singer's not here. We can't ask in. The stats now. But I'm just worried that we didn't look like scoring in that game. Yes, we those three balls are going to the box. Great. But there's no one on the end of them. You said that one shot on target we did have was that we probably should have taken away. Yes, we should, but that game especially, on once they got the opening goal after, was it 10 minutes or so, we just didn't look like, scoring. You know, I think I was saying this to everyone at half-time. I was like, albeit we've had some ball in the good areas, but we don't seem to be creating anything or anything worthwhile when we go down. I feel like we just looked bland, and we didn't look like a team who's got the squad we've got.
I thought Kearney had a shocking game. In particular,
I would say the only person who really came out of positive to me was probably Harrison Reed.
Yeah,
and often when we lose, he's obviously the only player who does.
Yeah, well, that's because I do think it's different for a defensive midfielder in that, you know, like, they've got one job, running shuttling in front of the back four, and you make a few tackles, you look good. But Kearney, he misplaced more passes in a singular game that I can remember in a long time.
Well, let's bring Joe in. Joe, it was a disappointing performance on the weekend, 3-0 hole. Maybe not the worst of the season, but it's got to be up there. Fulham are in a real sticky patch. One win in five. What did you make of it?
Well, I just thought it was overall just a really tepid display. Like, whenever Hull went forward, I felt really like we were going to concede every time. And I don't think there was one time when we were going forward when I thought we were going to score. And I think when you look at our team and you look at Hull's team, other than their front three, like, there shouldn't really be a chance for them in that midfield. We should be dominating that game and we should be creating chances. They've not got a great back line on paper, and defensively their record this season hasn't been great. And it just really annoyed me that we didn't test them, because every time the guy next to me kept on saying good defending, but it was easy defending because we didn't test them at all. Every cross was bad. There was never anyone in the box other than Mitrovic, and they just put two on him. So,
well, just very quickly, what did you make of the game? Tweet us. And if you're on YouTube, please check us out, because me and Joe are pulling off a nice multi-pack pair of grey hoodies that we've both decided to wear for this evening's show. And boy, do we look delightful pulling it off with aplomb. Dom, I have to mention, because I keep going back to what you said, before this, didn't we? We looked at the next run of games. We said five games. You said we have to get five wins from five, 15 points. It's one win from five. What do we mention about it? Where's it gone wrong?
I think what's gone wrong. I don't know if they've got too complacent and they thought, oh, because everyone else is doing quite poor, we don't have to put in all the effort. But ever since the Reading game, really, we've been poor. We haven't been good since then. And, you know, yes, the ten man of Reading helped us in that game. But I just don't understand. We just don't seem to have a game plan. There doesn't seem to be a progression in our play that makes me think, oh, we're going to create chances here. I just feel like they're getting too complacent. Like that Stoke game, we were absolutely terrible. And I just don't know if they understand, you know, what the job is at hand here. Because it is, yes, top six wouldn't be a failure of a season. But then if you don't win the playoffs, it kind of still is a failure of a season because the aim is to get promotion. But if you're looking at the league now, apart from West Brom, no one's really looked dominant. I know Preston have looked well, and obviously you tipped Preston before the start of the season. But yeah, we knew Preston were going to be a good team. They've been challenging for the playoffs in the last, you know, two or three seasons here. So I think that we're just it seems no one really wants this league. But the last month or so, you know, we looked at these five games as games. Well, you need to be getting what I think we looked at it, and the absolute minimum was 10, and we haven't won any yet. So I think it is getting obviously we're on the Luton game, but and we weren't convincing in that game.
Yeah,
like it was convincing, but it was still nervy going into the last few minutes after they got that late second goal one from Ksenga Luwalowa.
Do you disagree on that?
Well, I thought it was a very comfortable game. Like it was absolutely fun. We went 2-0 up. They got like a goal.
Maybe
back,
it's not comfortable.
Like,
you still shouldn't be letting Luton score two goals against you.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're going to criticise Parker for anything, it's not that.
It isn't that. But we still didn't look anything near to our best. I'd say we're probably about 65% in that game.
Yeah, I know. But I'm agreeing with you. What you're saying before, like, you know, the players do not look like they know what's going on. The players who come on off the bench don't know, like, they have no idea either. And, you know, like, I think Parker needs to come to some criticism here, because what you've been saying just now is that we've got no purpose with the ball, no shape, whatever. Like, everyone around me on Saturday was saying the exact same thing, you know? And that is, if we can see that we've got no kind of tactical guidance, it seems, and we're complacent and we're toothless and we're tepid, then it stops the manager, doesn't it? And I'm not going to be all reactionary and start calling for his head already, because that'd be stupid. But it's his responsibility now. You know, he's got the players. He's been backed. He's got the best two players in the league in Mitrovic and Kearney, you'd argue. Like, we need to be going up. And it's his responsibility to sort it out.
Yeah, I think you are very level-headed, Guy. You're balanced, you're sensible. But you did say, didn't you, at the start of the season, your biggest worry, if it was a worry or concern, was Scott Parker. And, you know, at the end of the season. Joe, let me ask, because obviously at the start of the season, everyone's like, Fulham automatic, their squad on paper, coming down from the Premier League, has to be top two for them. We know the Championship, A, is a very difficult league. B, when you do come down, it doesn't always work out like that. Look at Stoke. I'm not comparing Stoke and Fulham, but they are just outside the playoff place. You know, it doesn't always work on that. Was that a pressure that Fulham really maybe listened to and one that they didn't need?
Maybe, yeah. And also, there were a lot of comparisons with West Brom last year with Darren Moore as their manager, when they had probably arguably the best squad in the league, like we do. And it was just the manager that was letting that down, because they were sort of learning as they went along. And yeah, there was a lot of pressure at the start of the season. I don't think not getting top two would make the season a failure. I think not getting top six, as you said, would make the season a failure. But it's one of those where this league is there for the taking. Like, we probably won't find a league as weak as this in the next few years. Well, we'll see. But recently, it hasn't been like this. There's normally a runaway team. You look at Brighton, Wolves, Newcastle in the last few seasons. But it's literally there for the taking. And it annoys me that we haven't taken advantage of that. And it does seem like when we play, we're waiting for a player to just pull something out of nowhere, and they're all very relaxed. Well, I think there should be a time when we're putting wins on the board with this running games and sort of making a statement and saying, no, we're going to be the first one to take a charge.
Dom, Joe raises a really good point there. He was comparing it to last year, West Brom and Darren Moore. We know what happened to Darren Moore. He ultimately lost his job. West Brom feeling like it wasn't going to go their way. Guy mentioned that we have to give the season. He doesn't want to say, oh, Scott Parker's fault, knee-jerk reaction, you know, you're going to get this run. But ultimately, could Fulham look at it like that? If this run, you know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel, it doesn't turn around. Well, they may be looking at other situations, because we know in football, it's a results-based business. There isn't a lot of patience around anymore.
It's not like the Cairns are ones to know. not sack a manager. I mean, they've done it plenty of times in the past. You know, I think in the two Premier League seasons they've had six different people in charge of the club. And then obviously you had, you know, McGaff, Kit Simons and Slavisa Jokanovic in the Championship last time. So, I don't know. I think because they see he's only 2 points off the top six, and if you're saying you're only 2 points off the top six come November, but I think it's getting to the point now where you've got players like Anthony Knockaert, you've got players like Avan Caballero who are not performing, and is that down to the players? Because we've seen them do it at this level before, so is it Scott Parker not getting the best out of them? Probably, but then you get on to, oh, if you get rid of Scott Parker, who do you bring? Everyone talks to Houghton. It doesn't work like that, because he plays a completely different brand of football to what Scott Parker plays. And it was like when we replaced Lauricio Canepa to Claudio Ranieri. If you've got a squad that's been built around playing a certain style of football, you can't bring in another manager who's going to play a totally different style. It's like if, I don't know, Arsenal brought in Jose Mourinho. It wouldn't work because they're not used to playing a sort of pragmatic style of football. And I think it's a problem with Chris Hughton. You either give Chris Hughton the summer to build a team that he wants. This isn't a team that he would be able to work, because they don't play the style of football that he would like. So I think if you are going to bring someone in, you'd have to think of someone who plays a similar possession-based style of football.
Yeah, very good point from Dom there. We are doing listener questions next. There is a lot to get through, and we'll try to cover all of them. We're going to be kicking that off next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Fulham Fan Show. We are Fulham Love Sport Radio. This is the Fulham Fan Show. I'm joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast, Dom Bett, Sky Barlow and Joe Sampson. We are talking everything about Fulham. The game on the weekend, 3-0, maybe the worst performance of the season. They say maybe not, maybe that opening day defeat to Barnsley there, but one win in five. Where is that light at the end of the tunnel? Now we come to you because you're a big part of this show and you still can be tonight. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 70 20 558. But we've got the listener questions right here. I will put them to the team, to you three, to kick it off. This one from Mitchell FFC. If the goals keep coming from the left side area, is it time Ream was dropped?
I think this, we sort of touched on this a lot in last week's radio show, but it was that it's not just one person here. There's various things. Is it Joe Bryan, is he getting too far forward? Is it Ream not coming across to cover him? Is it holding midfielder not dropping in? But you could argue that, you know, come January, when Michael Hector's registered to play, that you'd put Mawson back in his favourite position of left centre-back, who's probably a bit more mobile than Tim Ream, and then Michael Hector at right centre-back, and would this issue be fixed then? Possibly, but then I think it is about, you know, Joe Bryan not committing himself forward, then obviously Caviero doesn't help him cut back. So I think for me, it's not just, you can't just put this blame on one player, but I do expect when Mark Hector comes back that you possibly will drop Tim Ream, move Alfie Mawson to the left side centre back, and then put obviously Hector on the right side.
Yeah, I agree, really. I know we've had a bit of rivalry with Villa the past few years, but everyone bangs on about how Tyrone Mings changed their season last year when he came in January. And I'm hoping Mickey Hector can do the same for us.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think it's a bit of a worry that now you saw that Hull targeted that left-hand side. Lots of teams will know that that's how to get us. So,
I mean, it's where we've seen every single goal.
It is literally every single goal, yeah. So especially when you've got players like Bowen up front and stuff like that, they're obviously just going to say, just go to that side. Especially when, with no offence to him, but Maxime came on, you could see that he didn't win his first few battles and then that was it. The confidence was gone and they were like, even better. Left side's even more inviting now.
Yeah, teams do their homework. They see where you're vulnerable and they attack it. Maybe that's an area why it's been one win in those five games. Next question from Rocco Baldwin. It says, how should we respond with the game on the weekend against Birmingham? What could we see different?
I don't know if it's anything different as such. I just think that maybe we were a bit too passive in the beginning of the game, and maybe if we shock Birmingham by going at them a bit more directly from the beginning of the game. I'm not saying give them a bit more possession. Obviously, they'll be the home team, so we expect them to have a bit more of the ball, but I think that we need to utilise our players on the flanks, and I don't think we're doing that. I think we've got two of arguably the best wide players in the league in Knockaert and Caviero, and they haven't been anywhere near their best for a very long time. I don't think Caviero has probably reached his best yet, same with Knockaert, and I don't think we're utilising them enough. I think that it's maybe also getting Kearney closer to Mitrovic, because I think if he is going to play that more advanced midfield role, he needs to be on Mitrovic. So Mitrovic has players to work off. So I don't think I'll really make any changes. In that left back position, I'd probably move Dennis Odoi out there and put Stephen Session on at right back, just because we don't have cover for him, and he's probably the closest thing we've got. And I don't think Maxine Lamarchand is the answer. And if he is, I do not want to know what the question is. But then I think you've got to look at the goalkeeping situation. Rodak's ban's going to come up. I think that's one of the later questions. But it would make sense for Parker to bring in Rodak, because Bettinelli didn't exactly impress against Hull. I mean, if you look at that third goal, I think it's one of the funniest goals I think I've seen us concede, when it just hits, I think it's Tom Eves who's falling over, and it just goes into the back of the net. And like, I don't think, when I watched it, I was like, nah, surely he's actually just meant to hit that, and he's sort of falling over. But no, it just hits some players falling over. So I would expect Rodak to come back in, but then otherwise I would go Stephen Session at right back. You keep Reem Mawson in the middle, have a Doi left back. You'd probably be more defensively aware on that left hand side with two players who are sort of natural defenders, as opposed to a wing back like Joe Bryan. And then a midfield three of probably Harrison Reed, Stefan Johansson, I'd play with Tom Kearney, you've got to have Caviero, you'd have Mitrovic, and I probably would bring Knockaert back into the side, because I think he's urging to really prove a point, and I just feel like Bobby Reed's a better option off the bench than he is starting.
I agree with much of that. I don't think Knockaert's done enough to...
But the thing is with Knockaert, he's not a player who's going to come off the bench and make an impact.
I think he might do. I don't know, but then I am torn with that, because Bobby Reed is not a winger, and I'm kind of...
I don't think anyone knows what Bobby Reed
exactly
is.
Exactly. Like, he's kind of impressed in parts, hasn't he? Like, when he came on against Charlton, he changed the game and he was fantastic. But I agree with you, the goalkeeper situation. Harry Arter, is he fit yet? Probably, we don't really know, do we?
I was about to say, if Harry Arter was fit, I'd definitely put him alongside, personally, Reed and Kearney.
I would agree.
And that would be, other than Rodak and Odoi swapping from right back to left back, and Stephen Session coming in, those are the changes I'd make, other than Jay Stansfield on the bench.
He's bagging in the goals left, right and centre for the youth teams, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, because there is actually a question on Arter. It's the next one, this one from A1. It says, what are the team's opinions on Arter deleting his Twitter account?
Well, obviously, it will seem to be football and politics merging this weekend, which is never a good thing.
Never.
Footballers who don't, understand politics, getting involved in politics, it just shouldn't be a thing. I think it's probably the best that most footballers aren't on Twitter, because they'll usually spout some rubbish and it will get them into trouble. So for Harry Arter's sake, because considering what he tweeted was completely wrong and out of context, it's probably a good thing.
It's quite funny. It's obviously, Charlton's Lyle Taylor got involved as well, which is he hasn't deleted his Twitter.
No, he's been having a bit of back and forth as well.
Yeah, with Tony Watt.
With Tony Watt.
Who's living off that goal against Barcelona.
Oh, yeah. Tony Watt was quite funny, but yeah, it was. I'm not necessarily of the opinion that, oh, you know, politics does affect everyone, so they're allowed to have an opinion on it. But it's just the fact that they were just embarrassed themselves because they just showed that they didn't understand what they were on about. But you know, if you want to come back with an informed opinion, that's fine. But his opinion wasn't informed.
Guy firing shots. Oh, wonderful Amish podcast.
And then he come in with the fishing emoji as well, which basically just says...
Means you haven't got an answer.
Yeah, it basically means, oh, sorry, I got absolutely everything wrong.
Yeah, it means I have no reply to you, so I'm going to say that you were fished. It's the worst, it's the woat of emojis, as Dom would say. Let's move on. The next question, should we bring Seri back in January? He's poor at Galatasaray at the minute, which makes me think, why do you want him back? But should we?
No. He's playing right now at the Bernabeu. He's losing 4-0.
I wouldn't bring him back, though. Like, I 100% wouldn't.
Why not? He's a Champions League player.
I don't think...
Guy loves these Champions League players.
It's not healthy whatsoever for the squad at all, for me. He was one of the problems why our dressing room was so divided last season. The likes of him coming in, Andre Schürrle and Anguissa, splitting the dressing room when it comes to all these big Premier League players. I don't think he would make too much of a difference in that midfield. I know he's a great player. I really don't see what difference he'd make. I don't see how he fits into the midfield. Because he needs that. He probably needs two players behind him, if anything, protecting him to allow him to use his creativity. So he wouldn't... you're thinking, you've got Harrison Reed. He's not going to play the R.T. Hansen role running up and down. If anything, maybe Anguissa would fill that role, as we spoke about even in pre-season. But yes, Seri, he can just leave. Like, terminate contract, mutual consent.
Terminate?
No need for him.
It's a strong word.
It is a strong word.
It'd be quite funny if he came back, though, wouldn't it?
No.
I think we should send him somewhere else. I don't think he should come back. But if he's not, well, I did see on my way here a Galatasaray fan tweeting something along the lines of Seri doing what he does best, giving the ball away.
Oh, come on. Which he's was about. World-class.
He's 100% correct.
Guy, would you want him back?
Genuine. Yeah, it would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
No, but in seriousness.
What, John McEl Serri playing in the Championship? Yes. A way to Preston on a Tuesday night in December?
Yes. Tough tie, tough fixture.
So it is going to be a very tough fixture.
Yeah, we're definitely going to lose that game.
Let's quickly, we can fit one more in because we've just been talking about, we talked about the five game fixtures. Tough Christmas period coming up. This one from Dan Williams. He says, if it does get tougher, how long realistically has Parker got left?
I think Parker will be fine until the end of the season, unless it looks like we're absolutely not getting the top six. I think as long as he finishes in the top six, he'll be fine. But then you can just look at Darren Moore at West Brom from last season, as we said.
Yeah, and can I quickly ask that? Because obviously a lot's made of Fulham, saying the squad they have, top two, automatic. I mentioned that to you, Joe. We know of the fans' expectations. We have to get straight back up, or certainly with this squad. What is the ball's expectations? Is it just getting to the Premier League, whether it's playoffs or top two, or it has to be top two, top six? Or do they think if we finish seventh or eighth, but we made a good go of it, that was enough? What is the board's expectations?
I think no matter what, just promotion. I think they don't care how it comes about, but the aim for the season, as you look at the investment in the squad, in what new contracts for Kearney, although he signs one every 2 days at the moment, Mitrovic, you know, Knockhart, Caviero, Harry Arta, they're looking to get back up straight away. And if they don't, you've got to look at, is it going to mess up with our wage structure? What are the deals in line in the future for Caviero and Knockhart and Arta? Is it if we get promoted, or is it at the end of the season we'll go and buy them? And if we do that, could totally mess up our wage structure.
Well, if they don't get back up, let's quickly go back to that question. Joe, how long has Parker got?
I do think it depends on this Christmas period. I can't see him being sacked unless it goes horribly wrong. But I do think that if we're, I'd say not outside the top two, but outside the top six significantly, then it's probably the time when they'll start reconsidering their options. But I don't actually see that happening.
Well, it starts with the game against Birmingham on the weekend. Delighted to say Blues TV commentator Dele Adeboli will be joining us next to give us all the information on that game.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast team, Dom Betts, Guy Barlow and Joe Sampson. We were just talking about the whole game from the weekend. Fulham really need to kickstart something now. They're just outside the top six. We know promotion is their only eye on the prize for this season. Will they get there? It starts with Birmingham on the weekend. I'm delighted to say joining us now, ex-Birmingham City striker and Blues TV commentator, Dele Adeboli. Dele, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time this evening. What have you made of Birmingham's season so far?
Hi, Dan, you okay? Birmingham have started really well. They've adopted a new style of playing. I thought last season it was highly successful. It was a little bit more direct, but the new manager's come in and wanted to play a more expansive and play it on the ground type of football, and he stuck to his guns and picked up more points than I think any other Blue side in the last sort of 5 years, and they're looking really good at the moment.
Obviously, looking at Fulham at home, probably, you know, about a month or so ago, 6 weeks in the last international break, probably looked like a tough fixture. But in our recent form, do you think, you know, the Birmingham City team will definitely be looking to get the 3 points on Saturday?
It's going to be a really tough game. I think Fulham are a good side, having a similar problem to Blues, as in, like, with so much possession, both sides try to have a lot of possession. It means that you don't create as many chances. And where Blues, I think, have come out the other side and have become a little bit more, they find a bit more of a balance. Fulham seem a little bit more stuck in the ways. Blues at home are, it's become a fortress. So, like, you'd fancy Blues to take the points, but definitely not an easy game.
With obviously Chetham's leaving in the summer, how have Birmingham sort of, you know, reacted to trying to find somewhere to get the goals from?
It's been roughly shared around. I think, funnily enough, the biggest attacking threat, I think, comes from the fullbacks. So playing that sort of expansive type of football, I think you see it in the Premier League loads. Championship is the same. Fullbacks are used so much now. Blues get their full-backs right up there, delivering crosses, getting into the box, and they're starting to chip in as well. And if you add that to sort of goals from midfield, there's not that heavy burden left to the forwards, just to the forwards to score.
A lot of the news I often see coming out of Birmingham, you know, as an opposition fan, is much of the chat obviously about your new style of play, but it's also about your goalkeeper. Like, Lee Camp is always seems to be in for criticism. And obviously, Birmingham's still got former Fulham goalkeepers, David Stockdale, just like rotting, you know, like in the reserves or whatever. So what do you make of the goalkeeper situation?
You know what? It's a really difficult one because I played, well, it's not difficult for me. I played with Lee Camp at Nottingham Forest and I thought he was a fantastic professional. Always reliable. He went to Middlesbrough, didn't have a great time, and that, you know what, once your reputation's tarnished, it follows you around. I think he's done really well at Blues, and there have been some mistakes, but he gets far more stick than what, you know, that it equates to. Look at where Blues are on the table, the amount of goals they've conceded. He's not throwing in, like, you know, rickets every game and stuff, but he seems to get that kind of attention. So when he does make a mistake, it's blown out of proportion. He's a good, steady pro for me.
With where Birmingham, obviously 12th in the table, but only, you know, 3 points off the playoff places because this is how ridiculous this championship season is. What is the aim for Birmingham this season? Is it just a challenge, or are there playoff hopes after the start they've had?
I think you get past Christmas and then you start putting a label on it. It's still too early to sort of say, even though, like I said, they've had the amount of points they've brought in with the way that they've changed the style of play and how, you know, threatening they look and you know, their home performances and the points they're picking up at home. It looks great at the moment, but you go on a run of 2 or 3 games and then all of a sudden it's doom and gloom again. I think the manager's just going to try and, like I said, get into the new year. If you're there or thereabouts, you've got a great chance because it seems like everyone's beating each other. You know, there's no real consistency apart from right at the top, your West Broms, and you're like, if you're there, you can maybe go and spend a little bit of money, bring a striker in and go for it. But I really do think Blues will wait to see where they are before they sort of announce a title challenge, because it's happened. They've got so far before in previous years and then fell away the second part of the season.
Obviously, in the centre of park, you've got this, you know, 16-year-old Jude Bellingham. He's obviously, this is his standout year. You know, I remember in August it was, he came on and scored the winner. What has he got to offer? Like, what kind of player is he, basically?
You know what? He is special. Like, you know, I always try to not big young players up because they don't need the pressure. You never know what they're going to be. There's been the Championship, Premier League is littered full of young talent, which, you know, people talk up to death and then they don't go and do anything. But Blues have been sort of nurturing him for the last few years. He is someone who they will eventually build their team around. I didn't expect him to play as many games as he has already, but fair play to the manager. He's found a position for him where he doesn't have to rely on his strength because he's still developing. He can just go out and play. And in the centre midfield, he just looks comfortable. He's able to show people what he's got. In another year's time, when he gets that little bit bigger and stronger, I think people will start taking notice. The couple of goals have got him a bit of attention, but maybe by next year, his performances on their own will start to sort of really get people standing up.
I had a bit of a look at the transfer business that Birmingham did over the summer, and one player that stood out to me was, probably butchering his name, but Ivan Sunjic, the Croatian midfielder. I was wondering, how do you think he's settled in so far? I've seen a few rave reviews for him, and do you think he's someone that's destined for the Premier League?
Yeah, you know, for me, when he first started, I thought he was a little bit lightweight. He was sort of diving into tackles and trying to put himself about a little bit, and the physicality of the Championship didn't seem to quite suit him. But, you know, the way Blues have adopted this footballing style, he's been able to settle, and he's probably settled far quicker than any of the other new recruits. And now you look at him, and he doesn't need to make the challenges that he was before because his football's taken care of everything. He scored some fantastic goals. The fans love him. He looks like a player who could make that step up into the Premier League.
Obviously, last time out against Cardiff, Harley Dean was sent off. Will he be missed against us on Saturday?
Yeah, I think Blues pride themselves on they don't really make too many changes. I think most teams, you know, defensively, most teams don't tend to make too many changes at the back. Harley Dean's been a stalwart for the last couple of seasons, so they will miss him massively. But just gives an opportunity for someone else to try and fill his boots. And there's plenty of young players and squad players who can step in and take that opportunity. Because if you look at his partner at the back, I mean, you've got the two of them. Last season Roberts didn't really get much gameplay. Now he's sort of playing really regularly, and he looks as if he's been there all along.
Our weakest area on the pitch at the moment is currently in between our left centre back and our left back, since where most of the other teams are sort of targeting and we've seen the most goals. So do you think Birmingham's right flank could cause us a lot of troubles on the weekend?
Yeah, Colin is definitely one of the top two or three players at Blues at the moment. I think he's absolutely fantastic. And down that right side for Blues, they do cause a lot of teams. They create a lot of chances from that right side. So if Fulham have got a weakness there, you know, they'll have a tough time of trying to shore up that side of the pitch, really, because they will have to do something to stop Colin. And I think it's at times it's either Phil Alba or, I mean, Rabti sort of drifts that right side as well.
Well, Delhi, it's a key clash on the weekend. What's your score prediction?
It's always tight. I always fancy Blues to win their games at home. Fulham, the way they keep possession, the scoreline's not going to be great. It's going to be the odd goal, and I think it's going to come down to whoever gets it first. Blues, I'm going to say 1-0 Birmingham City.
1-0 Birmingham City. Delhi, a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. Ex-Birmingham City striker and now Blues TV commentator Delhi Adebola there saying 1-0 for Birmingham on the weekend. What do the Fulhamish think about that? Before we get into your listener questions, because there was so many, I turn my attentions to you three in the studio. Dom, I'll start with you. Actually, no. I'll start with Mr. Positive Guy, because you really fancy Fulham in this one, don't you, Guy?
No, I reckon 1-0 Birmingham sounds about right.
Oh, Guy. Where's the positiveness from you, Guy, at the minute?
Well, there's nothing to be positive about.
Right, well, there you go, Dom. Well,
also, no, I'll justify it, though. As I was saying, we haven't won there in a while. You know, I know that they're trying to play this different style of play, but they've out-battled us in the last few times I've been to St.
Yes, because we always completely bottle it whenever we go there. I'm thinking the Fredericks red card. I'm thinking, you know, if we won that game, we get automatically promoted in 17-18. They need to win to stay up. So the quality is clearly in our favour. And then we lose, what was it, 3-1?
3-1, yeah.
So, yeah, we haven't won there since 14-15, since Hugo Rodriguez scored, which is our first win the season under Kit Simons in his second game in charge there. So, yeah, it's gonna be a tough one. I do think I just don't feel confident going into the game. Maybe I'm going to go for 2-1 Birmingham, but I just don't feel confident because of the way we're playing. And if they score first, there is no chance of winning that game.
Well, unbelievably, we've had 3 predictions, 2 from Fulham, 1 from Birmingham, but it is 3 for the Birmingham win. Joe, are you going any different? No pressure.
I'm going to be slightly more positive and say 1-1, purely because I think there'll be a bit of a reaction from us. I think there has to be. If there's not, I'm a bit concerned. But Birmingham very strong at home, and I can't see us winning there.
Oh, it's not looking good for the Fulhamish podcast team. Not predicting a win on the weekend. Either way, we'll definitely be here next week to talk about that game. Hopefully Fulham will get the win, but we are going back to your listener questions next.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with a Fulhamish podcast, Dom Betts, Guy Barlow and Joe Sansom. We were talking everything about the Birmingham game. Delighted to be joined by Delhi Adebola there. He was saying Birmingham win. Dom was saying Birmingham win. Guy was saying Birmingham win. Lucky we had Joe in the studio, because he was going for a point at least, positive result there for Fulham on the weekend. It would only be 1-6 if that was the case. But let's go back to your listener questions, because you are a big part of the show here, as you are every fan show. This question from Luke Christie says, why doesn't Parker try some different players? Matt O'Riley, maybe a different winger, Kamara.
No, not Kamara is the answer to that question. But no, he doesn't change it up. He doesn't actually... He just brings players on the pitch and is like, oh, do something. Like, there was... I think... I can't remember which...
Is that Harry says it?
do something, yeah.
Probably.
No, but it was, I can't remember what game it was, but it was a game we were chasing. It might have been the Forest game, I'm not entirely sure. But we ended up pretty much playing a 4-1-5, where it was just loads of players going forward, and that doesn't work. He doesn't change, alter a tactical system to then suit the players he then brings on. He's sort of just frozen forward, like, to the last 5 minutes on Football Manager. You've gone very attacking. You play about three complete forwards and two inside forwards and hope for the best. So I think Matt O'Riley, I don't think centre midfield is the problem, although I do want to see Matt O'Riley play a bit more because I do think he's one of our most promising players in our academy. But, yeah, the likes of Cabano, the likes of Kamara, you know, could be utilised a bit more just because, yes, you can bring on Bobby Reid, but he's not a natural winger. I mean, neither is Kamara to an extent, but, you know, you keep Cabano at the club as opposed to Aitib and you don't use him. I just think it's not about what players we start using. It's about altering the system to a system and then suits the players that are on the pitch as opposed to just shoving load of players on.
Kamara starts the playoff final, which we won and went up.
I'm not having this.
As a winger. And I think you'll find he's world-class, actually.
I'm not having that. I don't care. He came on the semi-final and played in the final.
He changed the semi-final, might I add.
He did not change the semi-final.
And then played the full 90 in the final.
Put some respect on the name, Dom.
Thank you. He's got lots to offer. Of course he does.
What has he got to offer apart from raw pace?
Just goals at Old Trafford.
It was a penalty. I'd already left the ground.
Thank you, Joe.
And at the Emirates. Right.
Not so much for that one, but
I mean, that being said, I wouldn't play him.
Oh,
but,
come on.
I do think that he is an option coming off the bench. But like Dom was saying just now,
he causes havoc. Like he doesn't know
everywhere.
If he doesn't know what he's going to do, how does defenders know what he's going to do?
He's a nightmare for opposing managers. You know, how can they put in a defensive game plan, Dom, when he doesn't know what he's going to do? He's the Tyson Fury of wingers.
He can do it all as well. Like you said, he's got dribbling ability. He's got finishing ability. He's got heading ability. You know, he's strong.
He's out of 20.
Raw pace.
Oh, he's world class. I'd start him. We've got nothing else to lose. The season's already over.
Joe completely disagrees. Let's move on. The next question is from Josh Cobb, and it says, why has Tony Knockers been such an anticlimactic signing?
It's hard to say, really. Is he suited to the way we're playing? Is the first thing I'd point out. Is he suited to this 4-2-3-1 sluggish possession-based system we've been playing? I'm not so sure. I think, you know, the quality's there. We've seen the quality in some of his dead ball situations and, you know, some of sort of passages of play. But I did think he was deservedly dropped for the Middlesbrough game. I don't think anyone was really surprised about that. I think he has been poor. I don't know what it is. I don't know if we need to change up our system to maybe find a system that utilises the R3 behind Mitrovic more. But, yeah, I'm not too sure what it's about because he is one of the best players, technically gifted anyway, in the league.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one. Talking about, you know, Parker's tactics, it goes back to this because I think him and Cavallero are swapping too much on the wings. And I know sometimes we want to play these inverted wingers, which has worked. Cavallero's come in off the left and scored a couple of bangers. But I don't think that can be helping Knockart. And if you look at...
Do you think us using two inside forwards is actually hurting the team? Because... if you have Kenny in the number 10, if Kenny wasn't playing 10 and we were playing a 4-3-3 as opposed to 4-2-3-1, I maybe understand, but if you've got two players you want to run inside and you've already got a number 10 there, they're all sort of driving into the same space. And I think that's the problem because Kenny's trying to utilise his space and then you've got Knockart running and Cavalier running. We don't have that anyone going on the outside, you know, because our forwards aren't bobbing on like they used to, so it isn't as effective. Do you think that's a bigger problem?
Well, I think... yes, the answer to the question, but I also think Kenny isn't getting on the ball enough. And I know you were talking about it earlier. Like you think Kenny needs to be either closer to Mitrovic or like really drop into midfield and get on the ball. I think he needs to be dropping into midfield more and actually taking control of games. You know, he's always been at his best when he's done that. When we had to have our backs against the wall. I mean, at Middlesbrough, you know, I thought he played well. You know, when there was a job to be done, when he's keep hold of the ball and hold out with 10 men and. He is the most creative player on the team, you'd say. I think, particularly on the weekends, too often the ball was going through Johansson and we found like Ream and Mawson like just inside the whole half and not doing anything with it. I'd rather drop Kearney back there and then put the onus on him, who's actually a creative player, to go and do something.
I feel like it's a situation where you've got to pick two wingers and stick with them now, because you get in a situation with a whole game where you've got Reed instead of Knockhart, and then Hull score, and then you swap them, and then they sub one off at half time, and no one they don't know each other well enough yet, because we're only a couple of months into the season. They should, I think, have a bit more chemistry now, but they don't, because it's not the same front three every week. And when we looked at the start of the season, we thought, right, that's it. Kearney in behind, Knockhart, Cavallero, Mitrovic, Reed obviously as well. But I do feel you just got to pick them now, keep it for a few games, see how it goes, because it's too predictable. But then once you change it, you've got someone coming off the bench, and it's for me, he's mixing it up too much up front. I think that that is an area where we need to start showing a bit more of a solid three every game.
Well, we'll go to our next question, maybe our last for this evening. This one comes from Jake Conroy. It says, is Mitro worth £100,000 a week, and is TC worth £60,000 a week? We'll go round this way this time. We'll end with you, Dom. Joe, I'll start with you. What do you make of that?
I think it's difficult. I think it's a lot of money. but the fact is that you look at the Luton game, I'm just going to use that one as an example. I do think, agree that it was comfortable overall, but you could see that Luton very easily scored a couple of goals, and it's the goals of Mitrovic that are getting us there. So I do think he's worth that to us, because I think that without him, we're not going to be challenging, and I do think he needs more service at this current time. I do think that Kearney is worth that if you use him in the correct way.
I completely agree. I'm surprised that Mitrovic is on that. I've never heard that figure before. That's a side point. I think that figure would be too much for the Championship, personally.
I thought that was obvious that he was on £100,000 a week when he signed. I thought that was known.
He was on 90 last season, and maybe he got a pay increase this year.
Really?
But I think what it is you've got to look at there's a player's value, then there's a player's worth, as you touched on, Joe. So I think Mitrovic 100% is. I think Kearney's still up for debate. He's worth it to us, but is he worth £60,000 is another question. But I don't think it's worth questioning what either player is worth to Fulham, because they're both players are critical in any promotion hopes we have.
Yeah, that's a really good talking point. Maybe we can carry that on to next week's show, talking about money and value to a certain team and to the Championship season area, and Guy not knowing about the £100,000. We don't know if it's true. It's a really good talking point. Well, Fulham play Birmingham on the weekend. The Fulham team not feeling confident ahead of this one, saying that Birmingham may get the points there. And you can find out how we feel about it, as you can every week, 9 to 10 on Wednesday. Love Sport Radio. It is the Fulham Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.